Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie.
I'm Michael Brooks.
On Point is where we highlight someone or something getting it right. And we got a lot of energy in the studio.
It's
we
It's right energy. On Point energy. It's Southern energy.
We are Brooklyn, grounded in LA.
We
are joined by James Andrews, CEO of Smash Labs. What's up, brother?
Hey. It's good to be here. I'm a big fan of the show.
So thank you.
I'm fanboying right now because you guys are crushing it on my weekly podcast that I now listen to in my fancy Bluetooth speaker in my shower.
Awesome, man.
Good to be here.
You know, that my goal as a host and broadcaster, I've only been in this game for a couple years, but I want to be listened to in as many showers as possible.
Yeah.
So every time I hear that, that makes me happy.
That's the perfect place to listen because that's when you're relaxed, you're calm, you're getting your day ready, and we're given inspiration, man.
Oh, bro, I got this thing called Mr. Steam. I put that mug up to like 120, and I'm literally in my own spa sauna with my own podcast, and your guys.
And you got the samurai cultural anthropology trends insight from Two Dope Boys.
You guys do a great job. No, it's really good to be here, guys. This is pretty good.
Thank you.
I mean,
great to have you.
You know, I feel fortunate because I've known you now for a little while. You know, we've had a few conversations, and I think what you're doing with Smash Labs is I think it's safe to say this is groundbreaking work. You know, and so let's start there.
Okay,
with like walk us through exactly what Smash Labs is, how you guys are positioning the company, and what you're focused on, and then I want to circle back and get into your background, how you got there, and all that good stuff. So let's do Smash Labs.
Okay, great. So Smash Labs is a growth accelerator that in many ways I describe it as if a record company, an ad agency, and a management consulting firm had a baby. That's kind of where it's kind of the space that I live in. We sit uniquely in between.
It'd be a cerebral dope
it'd
baby.
It'd be a cerebral dope ass baby with a dope sneaker game. So I'm fortunate enough to run an organization now at Smash Labs that before I took the reins was in three parts. One was an accelerator that provided a lot of deal flow for our venture side of our business. A magazine called Smash.co, which is a media property, and a consulting practice, which, you know, consisted of some stuff that Troy was involved in. And so I've consolidated all the businesses to create Smash Labs. And as I mentioned before, Smash Labs is really a growth accelerator. We help brands think about the future, how to grow and scale. But we do that with a very unique kind of look at the world. And the look at the world is through culture and emerging technologies. We are definitely, you know, culture anthropologists by training and B-boys by, you know, by DNA. We come out of hip hop. We look at the world and we look at how things grow and scale and through the fortune, the good fortunes of being involved in, you know, one of the greatest contributions to culture. Which is hip hop. And so, my partner is Troy Carter and he and I have known each other a very long time. Back in the day, I knew him was on the Bad Boy Street team and, he was able to take, positions in record companies and street teams, and became a music manager. He managed Eve and then he was sort of like down and out.
Can you explain real quick for some people that are listening and might not know about street teams, that culture, where they come from and what that entails?
Oh my gosh. One of my favorite subjects. So, in, you know, 92, 93, you know, when hip hop was emerging, when it was coming out of college radio into mix show radio and mainstream radio, you know, we had to figure out a way to get exposure.
Right.
And the way that we got exposure is by giving passionate young kids the ability to represent, you know, that record in their neighborhoods. And so the idea of Street Team was really about empowering kids and communities to kind of tell their friends and their community and their influencers about a new record. I would say I would have to give credit to Steve Rifkin and the SRC company, Steve Rifkin Company, as the pioneer who kind of built a business model around street teams. And so what Steve was able to do in LA is actually build a workforce of soldiers in various cities, and he worked probably every major record in hip hop from about 92, you know, on.
And it's one of the rare examples of a seamlessness of marketing, yeah, culture and content and, yeah, genuine passion.
Exactly, genuine passion. You know, pre social media,
right?
It really was word of mouth. And then, yeah, he ended up starting working on brands and HBO and Nike and so forth. But yeah, street team culture is really the analog version of what is today called social media.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, yeah, it's yeah, in essence, it's the same thing that you 10X.
Yeah, it's 10X. Stickers and street signs, yeah, and flyers.
Exactly.
And pushing the single and all of that.
That's it. Pushing the message, being the representative in that community. I mean, even wearing a jacket, even wearing a Bad Boy jacket with Def Jam, yeah, jacket, you know, in the 90s, you know, really was a reflection of the brand. And so, yeah, so street team culture is where, you know, I come out of, you know, Troy, all, you know, a bunch of us that are kind of at that age, right? We all kind of were part of that moment in time. And so I think a lot of, I bring that up to say that a lot of that early exposure to hip hop is really what's baked into the DNA of our company. So we're like a Booz Allen, McKenzie, or, you know, Accenture, but we come from hip hop, you know, and we come from that world. So we get access to, you know, how trends start, where culture is evolving globally. And we bring that understanding, those insights, that passion to Fortune 500 companies. And we are helping them think about, you know, how do you grow and scale your business in an emerging market?
Now, it's interesting, both you and Troy come from a music background, and obviously you've kind of touched on that with the street team perspective, but do you think there's other sort of unique properties of coming from music and tying from culture that make you guys uniquely positioned to do what you do?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and Troy even more so than myself, because he really brings this into the venture side of the business. And it should be noted that Troy, in addition to being my partner on this, his full-time job is he's, you know, global content something. I'm probably messing it up.
No, that's exactly what it is.
Global content something.
That is it.
He's like the Jimmy Iovine of Spotify right now. That's how I describe him. I don't know. He does whatever Jimmy is doing at Spotify and Lior's doing at YouTube. Troy is doing that at Spotify. And so, to most of his time is spent at Spotify. But when he's not spending time at Spotify and not spending time with me, he is a venture partner in a company called Cross Culture Ventures. Before that, Troy was an angel investor, which meant he invested his own money on about 75 early stage startups, Uber, Spotify, Lyft, Dropbox, to name a few. And now he's a venture partner in a venture firm. So I think the unique thing that we bring to this is the identification of star power, right? Because even when you're investing in a startup, you got to invest in a person. You got to invest in a person who is going to be able to, you know, bring this company through the good and the bad times. And I think Troy has really been able to take his background as a music manager and apply that in early stage investing, being able to identify founders and see the correlation between founders and rock stars. So I think there's that, right? And there's also, for me, I grew up in the record business when BDS and SoundScan were sort of the driving forces of where, and for those of you listening, BDS sort of measures radio play, and SoundScan measures sales. And so all of my decisions have been a mix of Spidey Sense and data. So when I built my first companies, they were data-driven social media companies, and they were the ability to scrape data and look at data, interpret it really fast, and then make creative decisions really, really quickly.
See, I think that's a really important point. And this is what excites me about what you guys do. And this is something Phil and I talk about all the time with the Cultural Prime Directive and all of mm-hmm. that kind of work, right, that we reference a lot and write about a lot in our own work. So many places now are kind of blindly looking for the big data solution to everything,
yeah,
right? And there's always a dark side to that.
Yes.
If you go into social policy, like there's this new book out that on another show I work, you know, The Majority Report, which is my, you know, my other gig, recently had this woman on. She's talking about how, you know, big data sort of freed of a cultural and political understanding in that instance can help reinforce everything from like disparities in sentencing to denying people loans and everything else. Now, if you take it into the cultural and brand yep. and business space, if you're looking for just data-driven answers to things that are also fundamentally cultural questions,
yeah.
you're going to miss a lot. And I think the integration that you guys have, that sort of seamlessness, that yeah. holistic perspective
yeah.
is shockingly rare.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think that you nailed it. I love you call it data, not data. Big data.
Your data, my data.
Exactly. I think that you have to have what I call a hood Spidey sense. You know what I mean?
That's like, what Matt calls it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our producer. He calls it the hood Spidey sense. You got super it. Producer Matt.
Super
like
producer
that.
Matt.
He learned that in the Dakotas.
In the Dakotas.
Yeah.
It's true. Every part of the country, you have to use your hood Spidey sense, even Dakota. it really is.
Especially Dakota.
Especially Dakota.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think there's a cultural nostril, right? There's like a thing that's like, that smells. And it helps me, you know, my cultural nostril in, you know, in Rio and São Paulo and around the world to know like where shit's popping. And I think that comes from bringing you back to the beginning. You know, I used to manage DJ Jazzy Jeff. He's my best friend. And I travel the world with Jeff. And when you manage the biggest DJ in the world, on the planet, you know, the best DJ in the planet.
Yeah, he is the best DJ.
You do a few things when you get to Berlin, right? You get a few things when you get to Cologne. You find the vinyl store, you find the sneaker store, and you find the head shop. And so it's generally around those three places that you're going to find your tribe, right?
Yeah.
You're going to find your tribe that leads you to your other tribe. And so after traveling Europe, traveling, you know, the world with DJs and artists, you start to really, you know, begin to unpack where does culture unfold? Where do trends emerge? And I think a lot of that we do take into our work. You know, it's like, you know where it's going to pop off, you know, good or bad.
Yeah.
There's also a bad pop off, right? But you know where the goodness pops off. You know where the badness pops off. And I think a lot of that we want to help brands understand.
So it's an empathy and instinct.
Yes.
That correlates with
absolutely.
The data.
There it is. Well said. You could have distilled all that, boiled that all into, I'm going to use that.
Well, credit where credit is due.
Exactly, credit where credit is due.
Do you think there's a challenge to brands understanding that perspective in the sense that, you know, when I think about culture and kind of coming of age in the same time, you know, hip-hop informed everything, and I think that's a big part of what we do here.
Yeah,
definitely.
You know, is that, but hip-hop took time.
Yeah.
You know, do you think brands have the patience to allow culture to kind of grow?
Let it simmer.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have no choice at this point. I think that, you know, you take a few phenomenons. I'm obsessed with a few. One is the browning, the black and browning of the U.S. population, right? So what's happening now is brands are like punched in the gut because they really don't understand how to move and scale products and build services around an emerging population. And so they're missing cultural cues. They're missing this phenomenon I'm playing around with around third culture kids, right? Kids that are too Korean for the white kids and not Korean enough for their Korean friends. And they're bringing food palettes and difference in flavors to their homies, right? You go to Atlanta where I used to live for 12 years. There's like Korean kids who like know everything about trap music, but they're on Buford Highway and they're super Korean and super trap. You know what I'm saying? So brands then are like, okay, if this is our breakfast cereal eater, like how do we prepare for a world with this kid, right?
But again, you can't do the crude demographics then either.
You can't. No.
That's another thing we talk about all the time. Post-demographic world.
Yeah, it's over. It's
you
a whole.
You can't because everybody's trying to look for these linear answers to things that are fundamentally not
totally.
Linear.
So now as a brand, you have to have an A&R guy. You know, you have to have a cultural insights guy. It's not an insights guy that just pulls data. It pulls data, right? That pulls like,
and
you know,
got it right now.
Data. Yeah. Yeah. It's a cultural insights guy that actually lives in the culture. You know, if you think about the record company model, that's actually what makes a great A&R person from a not so great A&R person. That great A&R person actually lives in the culture. You know, a great A&R person lives on the train, lives in the community with the people that they're signing. And so, I think these insights all play really well. And it's really a blessing to be at this point in my career to kind of take all of the things I've done in all of my, you know, career journey, my hero's journey, and to be able to do this now for Fortune, you know.
Dude's talking about
brands.
Joseph Campbell now, too.
I know.
This is obviously a family member here.
I will drop
this
some Campbell on you.
Member.
I will drop some
he
Campbell
listens
on
to
you.
Our show in the shower, and he likes Joseph
that's
Campbell,
right.
And it's
yes.
post-demographic. I
that's
love this
right.
man.
That's right. It's definitely a hero's journey fan sitting here. I built my whole last company, actually, on Joseph Campbell's work. It was called True Story. It was called True Story Agency. And it was a data-driven storytelling company.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is that when you're building a digital social campaign for a brand, or when you're launching something, that there's a character in the narrative as you launch products. So I actually co-opted, as so many others have, Joseph Campbell's work to fit in my marketing work.
Not many as good as you, man. Go ahead.
You've repositioned. You're in LA.
Yeah.
You know, what are things that really have you excited about kind of making all of this come together? You know, pulling three disparate companies or kind of divisions into a whole is no small challenge.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you see that like forming and taking place? Like what gets you really excited about where you are?
Well, I think, you know, for me, first and foremost is cities. So cities are the character in my script, right? And so I'm leaving Atlanta, and it's almost like a lover, right? I was in a 12-year relationship with Atlanta. She was amazing, and
yeah, I don't know. She tweeted me some questions.
Did she?
She's not that happy.
She's not that happy.
Yeah,
I would imagine that she's not happy right now, because you know, and I really love Atlanta, and I love cities, and I'm actually mildly obsessed over the role that cities will play in this third wave of innovation that Steve Case talks about in this book, right? And so,
The third wave. Okay.
Yeah, it's a decent read. I hacked it, and I'm rebuilding it for speeches I'm giving. But what I'm obsessed about is the role of cities in the third wave, right? And this idea that we're in this next generation of you know, internet of everywhere, ubiquitous internet, and we're going to solve for these big problems of transportation, healthcare, education. Well, you can't really solve those problems unless you're working with people who actually know those problems, and those people who know those problems are in our cities. And I think that innovation will move from Silicon Valley and New York into places like Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. Shout out to Cincinnati, my boys in the corner. There it is.
Yeah. There's a lot of excitement in the studio right now.
Right? I know my crowd.
Cincinnati's in the building.
Right. I'm the crowd. If I had known.
The Natty. It's clearly, yeah. No high-tech fans in here. Okay. So places like Cincinnati, Birmingham, you know, a lot of people realize that you know,
Nashville,
Chattanooga has the fastest Wi-Fi in the country right now, Gig City. So, you know, there are these amazing cities, right, that I think I'm really excited about. And I as a 21-year returnee to Los Angeles, I went to UCLA, and I'm now returning to Los Angeles. I have seen a city really emerge and evolve into an immigrant population that's exciting, really neighborhoody, like lots of pockets that you would never live in. You now live in Atlanta. And it's just more confirmation that I think this city, no matter who, this country, no matter who gets elected, oh God, you know who I want to be elected, of course.
Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, dude came in with a Trump sticker. It was surprising. I didn't expect that.
You know, no matter what happens, we've got a bolster.
Three teams for Trump?
That's... Yeah, Steve Rifkin should work with Trump. That'd be amazing. No matter who gets elected, we've got to boost these cities. So I'm first and foremost excited about cities, and LA has been a shockingly even way doper city than I even gave it credit for.
Okay,
I want real quick. I think that's really important, because also the sort of character of the cities that dominate, that are kind of at the center, definitely influence the rest of the country. Yep. So what we're thinking in terms of centers and peripheries carries over. So it's really interesting to think about the emerging cities that people don't think of as center, sort of being on the center ground.
You know what got me there?
They're emerging. Also, you should read, I think it's How to Rule the World, How to Run the World by Parag Khanna. And that argument.
I had dinner with him in Dubai.
Okay, he's a good dude.
My guy. I like that guy.
Yeah. So cities and city states and the sort of new medievalism. That's right in our zone, too.
Good to know. It's funny. Smart guy. Didn't realize he wrote an amazing book, but I spent all dinner with him.
Second World and How to Run the World.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think that everything I learned about this narrative around cities was when I moved from New York to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I was forced to defend Atlanta.
So why you treat her like that, then?
It's like any relationship, you know what I mean?
Runs its course.
Yeah. Sometimes it just dies in the vine. You have to let it go.
A 12-year vine.
Yeah, they don't always understand.
Another girl came along, and her name was Angelina. And, and you know.
Direct your tweets to him.
Exactly. So, yeah, cities are special, man. Cities, and Atlanta was a very special place for me to fall in love with a city. Mm-hmm. And it made me respect a place, the South, that I never had any kind of exposure to. I didn't consider myself a Southerner. It made me really defend the South and defend innovation, defend culture. There's no, Atlanta right now is everything. It is culture. You turn on the radio right now, it's all Atlanta. I turn on TV, there's Atlanta Sayings. I turn on the TV and it's Donald Glover's show, Atlanta, which is killing it right now, right?
So
Atlanta.
This is covered extensively on this show.
Our last show was about Atlanta.
It should be. Atlanta is a shirt that I have at home. Shout out to my guys, Ian Ford and Bame. I have a shirt that they made called Atlanta Influences Everything. And it really does. It really, I kind of was
but
like.
But not as much as Cincinnati.
Not as
right.
much.
Ooh.
Cincinnati is everything. There's a lot to Cincinnati. I just got schooled on Cincinnati a few minutes ago. So cities play a role. I'm also excited about, you know, entertainment and LA's sort of newfound, like, you know, prominence in the tech world, right? They, you know, I used to go to LA and like no one understood technology. And now LA is arguably, you know, a real player in the tech ecosystem.
And more connected to a larger social ecosystem than Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
So some of the innovations that are coming from LA in tech are going to be far more socially, politically, and third wave relevant than Silicon Valley. No
absolutely.
Question.
Yep. Exciting place to be, LA, right now. Again, you know, really good and great to have a partner, Troy Carter, who damn near runs the whole city. But, you know, I think, you know, I'm learning also that, you know, as former record executives, you know, that we are just like it's an unfair advantage that we got this opportunity to work and to help build a genre, which, you know, who gets to do that? You know, I got an unfair advantage in seeing the inside of Atlanta and then the making of a new city, an emerging city. And now really, as much as my work is for profit and about, you know, helping clients and helping big brands and so forth, my work is really about, and what I'm most excited about is what I'm calling the undocumented or the off the grid entrepreneur. And I consider myself and Troy in that class. We are not, on the census numbers, people that are supposed to be, you know, investors and be in the tech economy. And yet we very much are supposed to be in the tech economy. And so I believe there's a billion more like us. So what I'm most excited about is identifying in communities, in these communities I mentioned, the other Troy Carters and James Andrews of the world who, not just when I say they're not just black, they are just off the grid. Like they don't call themselves part of the innovation economy. They don't call themselves technology, right? But they are they are tech companies. And so that's probably in our work. We're doing a tour right now called Culture and Code. We just got back from Atlanta and we're doing 10 cities. And I think my work, the work to be in a market and meet with a brand is no longer just showing up in a Cincinnati, hey, and just meeting with a brand. It's going to Cincinnati and taking pitches from entrepreneurs, going to community centers and talking about like, hey, do you know what venture capital is? Going and getting on the hip hop radio show and talking about the connection, what I'm talking about here between hip hop and technology. We want to go into markets and not just take meetings with brands. We want to go on the market and impact from the bottom up. By the time I walk into a Procter & Gamble meeting, the streets are going to feel me. Like the streets are going to feel, you know, what we're doing. And that's kind of the way we're approaching all the business moves we make.
Dude.
Love it.
Perfect.
It's perfect.
It's perfect. How many other cities are you going to? You mentioned you have 10. You're obviously
random number, by the way.
Random number. Yeah. That's all good. Like where are some other spots you're going to be hitting?
Yeah. And so there's some obvious and unobvious ones. I think for us, Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, you know, really important cities for us. Brooklyn. I say Brooklyn, not just Manhattan, Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's always about Brooklyn.
I think for us, it is about, you know, East Side communities, you know, places that have East Side communities. It is about Oakland for us. It is about Compton for us. It is about Newark, New Jersey.
North Dakota.
Shout out to Dakota.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And South Dakota. I didn't forget you either, girl. South Dakota.
Idaho.
Idaho. ATL ho. Idaho. Idaho. All the hoes. We're going to cover all of them. We're going to cover all of them.
Cut.
Exactly. Cut. But no, even it really, I've been doing a lot of work internationally. So I am, you know, I'm sort of, you know, obsessed with what's happening in the continent of Africa and we want to go to places like obviously Nigeria and Kenya, but Somalia as well. I've become really fascinated with what's happening in the Horn. So we're taking this approach into markets, being accessible. I mean, most kids don't understand how to reach Sand Hill Road, right? They don't know what a Sand Hill Road is, right? And so we want to be the Sand Hill Road and be there. You know, we want to bring a different version of what you think technology is. I mean, that's, you know, I was just sitting with my man Gerald Cooper, who's in the house. He's the Cincinnati resident.
Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out.
And you know, the work that he and Guru are doing around the era, the engineer, is also, you know, it's a big part of like that kind of framework of like I grew up in Palo Alto. I went to high school in Palo Alto High School. Went to high school across the street in Stanford. Grew up playing with computers on Stanford's campus and discovered this thing called the internet in the '80s. And as much as I have that in my background, everything I know about technology, I learned from a guy named Jeffrey Towns, who's DJ Jazzy Jeff, from D Nice, who was a computer science major, who built our websites. Like all of the early exposure to technology are from the first dudes who had laptops and Apple IIe's and computers.
I just want to say really, really quick, just to close this loop, because I know we need to wrap up in a second. But what's fascinating to me is that what you're talking about, again, it's another data and culture corollary, because there's all of the economic disparities. We live in an age defined by mass inequality that crosses all sorts of boundaries. And that's very real, and that's a major barrier to access to everything you're talking about. But then there's also just the cultural and stories that we tell that prescribe to certain people limits.
Yeah.
And you're doing the cultural correlation of overcoming that inequality by just even presenting possibilities. So that's another great sort of culture and data kind of synchronization, which I really appreciate.
No limit. You didn't hear the Solange interlude? You got to listen to Master P and the Solange interlude. He's dropping science on them interludes.
That Solange record is fire.
Yo, no
She's
limit.
She's really
no
good.
My fire. Grandfather, he told me, in the army. Yo, that's an amazing
story.
This is
the first piece of like ubiquitous pop culture in a while that I've have to give it up for. Like,
Solange's album.
Yeah, Solange's record
it's really
is
that is an objectively good album.
It's an objectively good album, yeah.
Yep.
Brother, it's been a pleasure having you
thank
on, man.
Thank you.
Give a quick thank shout, you, like, where can you, people you. Find you? Like,
yeah, I'm at Key Influencer on Twitter. I'm at Key Influencer everywhere because I locked it down early. At Key Influencer Twitter, at Key Influencer on Instagram, you know, Snapchat, jamesandrews.tv, smashlabs.com. I mean, if you can't find me, then you're not really searching hard enough.
There you go. Brother. It's been a pleasure having you on with us, man.
Thank you.
We
got to
have
so
you
much.
On again.
I love your show. I put you in my Ad Age article, guys. I'm a real fan.
This needs to be the first of many
Gerald's
many
here,
conversations.
We're gonna put you on the spot. We got to get Guru on the mic, brother.
Yeah, Guru needs to be here.
Follow me already. We're gonna follow each other.
Oh, perfect.
All right.
Good stuff.
And we out.